not necessarily take a piece of candy. It's a good thing, but, and it's good that we do that instead of money supplying, you know, funding an addiction, but it doesn't get them out of the hole.
No.
And it just struck me that, I mean, I know that when I hand out a pack, I know I'm not saving their life, but we need a lot more.
It's impossible to get housing if you don't have a case manager. You know, you got to be connected with somebody to help you get housing, because the homeless people are really kind of, you know, they're not, they don't know how to get online and get anything, you know, and so, or going up to someone and say, going up to a place and say, well, you have any apartments, and that's, you know, that's old school stuff these days. And so somebody needs to help them work through the system, and the system, of course, is getting tighter and tighter in terms of trying to work your way through, you know. And the system has gotten so now that people who are homeless are, you can't just be homeless anymore. You got to be homeless. You got to be chronically homeless, yes. Chronically addicted, yes. And also chronically ill. And, you know, we sit in meetings trying to bid for apartments with our clients, making decisions and trying to determine if diabetes is worse than some other chronic illness. You know, because, you know, the more chronic they are, the better their chances of getting into housing. And so you go to these low-income housing places, and they're looking more and more like nursing homes. Just tons of people in wheelchairs and, you know, have mental issues, and it's just, you know, it's not what it used to be. Yep.
Do you know that, is there the housing first approach? Or
well, that's the housing first approach.
I mean, that you get people, yeah, give them housing and then deal with their addictions and things.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of, yeah, a lot of places do that where you, because housing is treatment, people say. You know, people get into housing, they drink less.
Yeah.
You know, they may still drink, but they drink less. They're not on the streets with their buddies. And even better than that, if you get them cable. They get cable, you know, they're locked in. Yeah. They're going to sit and watch Bonanza. I have several clients. Well, all they watch is Bonanza, Big Valley, all of that stuff, the stuff you look at where everybody is dead. And it's black and white, and they're hooked on it. They, you know, they got to go because they have an appointment they don't want to miss, you know, Big Valley. They also get hooked on soap operas. I have a friend, a client who loves soap operas, you know. And he's got to see The Bold and the Beautiful every day. That's his soap opera. And he started watching it in prison, he said. So, yep.
We had a large homeless encampment in Minneapolis last summer. And for some of those, it was tent camping, and they were intense. And for some of the people that then were given housing, they lost their community. They were in a, you know, in a one-bedroom apartment someplace, and many of them found themselves going back to visit because they had lost, you know, that was their community, and they didn't like being alone.
Yeah, that's true. That's where your friends are, that's where your buddies are. You know, you don't want to, we wouldn't want to do that, move somewhere. And
so what's
a lot
what,
of times we,
yeah.
we take in consideration leaving our neighborhoods and
right.
stuff like that.
So is there a different model? I mean, where are there any other models for that where there is, you know, housing, co-housing, something like that, that would continue with that community and support, but get them out of their tents in the rain and the winter?
No, I don't think housing people consider that. They consider if you're out of the streets, then that's good. Doesn't matter if you're away from your support group or anything like that. That's not their issue. Her issue is getting them into housing. Yep.
Some of my friends know this, but I was in the psychiatric help for about 5 days, and it was about Harding going to sleep, having a hard time sleeping, and so I had a psychiatrist that helped. It was a scary place to be. I didn't talk to hardly anybody. There were people there that you could play ping pong with, and I did that, who worked there. But just to say, there was one really funny thing that made me laugh, that there was a nurse there who, when I went, wanted to, I needed a key to get into my locker, because you can't have anything with you except for, you know. And they said, yes, what's your name? And so I told her, and she said, oh, you were a lot of work. I had to cut your hair when you had your accident. And your hair is thick, and you were, I mean, it was funny. She remembered, it was like 12 years ago, and I had a brain injury. And she remembered that what they had to do was cut my hair. And that made me start laughing. I felt like that was a real person who, I mean, I was happy that she thought I had icky hair. Great. But it was really, it was the right place. I got the kind of, they had to try a couple times to get the sleeping thing that worked for me better, but even so, I didn't think it was so much better, but I was there, and I got home, and that I was happy to be home. It was hard, but probably right.
Well, a lot of us have been through things that if we were homeless, it would have made life a lot worse. You know, like I had my knee replaced, and everything went wrong. I had 2 infections and 5 surgeries. And if I had been homeless, that would have just been devastating. What would I have done? And just anything from a cold to Alzheimer's. I've had clients with Alzheimer's in their homes. Yeah. You know, and you know, what do you do with that person? You know, I mean, that we worked and connected them and got him in housing eventually, but it took a while. And meanwhile, he was just out there, homeless, with Alzheimer's. So, yeah.
Are there numbers of people that are homeless decreasing with all the services, or does it just keep filling?
No, it keeps growing because of the shortage of housing in all your major cities. The housing is just getting squeezed and squeezed, and you all know that. And some people are dealing with it in different ways. Some people are doing the encampments. Some people are doing the Winnebagoes. But no, it's going up. Did I see a hand over here? Yeah.
I'm struggling with my local food bank. They provide what I consider high processed, low quality food to our homeless population and even our low income population. And I struggle because I feel that a box of chocolate donuts or yesterday's leftover cake from the bakery at Safeway isn't giving them the nutrients they need to actually combat some of that. You can't have a brain that is healthy on the wrong oils and the wrong processed foods. I feel like we need to kick that up a level. Say, I'm sorry, but chocolate donuts are great. I love them too. I'm not putting down processed foods. But if that's your only diet, it's almost like the food bank is keeping people down.
Well, there are places who are doing that, you know, who are working with that. But you're right. Most of the food that they get are food that they, you know, these grocery stores can't sell. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people go by and, like, we have a food service. I mean, we serve meals at my church, which has been going on for over 25 years. And, you know, a couple of guys go out in the trucks and go to different grocery stores and get, you know, what's left. But that's what's left. You know, cabbage won't keep. You know, fresh fruit just will not keep. So.
Well.
But yeah, you're right, I agree. I don't have any argument. Won't get any argument from me.
In the Twin Cities, the Wilder Foundation does a homelessness census every 3 years. Mm-hmm. I did it in 2015, it was eye-opening. Mm-hmm. But they noticed with the most recent census they did end of 2018 that the homeless veteran population has actually mm-hmm. decreased. Is that true around the country, or is that a Minnesota thing?
No, they made a big push for vets and threw a lot of money at the vets. And so, yeah, they're really working with vets.
Can that be transferred to a different kind of homeless population?
No, because money doesn't work like that. And I'm not an expert, but I know people, you know, if people are dying for vets to get money, your politicians make sure that vets get money. You know, I mean, that's just the way it works. You know, it goes in little pockets like that. You know, if all of a sudden someone makes a push for unwed mothers to get money, well, then the money will go there for a while. And that's just the way the money goes. Yep.
So I came, and you know, you helped us understand the homeless, where they're coming from, and what's going on. I want to know what's working in your program and what we need to do.
Well, that's a big question, because clearly housing isn't enough. Housing is, we just can't build housing fast enough. And, you know, housing goes towards the people with the money. Who saw that documentary, Seattle is Dying? And one of the things in there that struck me about it is that, you know, Amazon pays zero taxes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If Amazon paid taxes, you could take that money and help people buy housing. And then, you know, you rely on people's generosity. And sometimes they're generous, sometimes they're not. It's nothing you can count on, whereas if they were paying taxes, you could count on that money coming in, you know. And so that's, housing is a problem. If everybody got together and said, let's all work on this, but it doesn't seem to be going like that. You know, it's like the county wants their money to do this, and the city wants their money to do that, and the nonprofits want the money to do this, and nobody's getting together saying, let's all work on this together. This, you know, the county thinks that nonprofits are goofy. Nonprofits think the county is greedy. And, you know, it just kind of goes like that. So, but every little piece helps. You know, Seattle is a place where people say you'll never starve in Seattle. And so that's the reality, is that there's always food in Seattle. There's always places to go and get food. Churches are doing a wonderful job of feeding people. But, and doing things like, you know, dying churches, selling their property or putting up housing on their property, that kind of stuff. That's going well too. But it's like we can't seem to do it fast enough or enough to deal with our homeless population.
Well, the cost of housing has made it more valuable for making wealth. So, I mean, you used to be able to buy, you know, a big house for a homeless shelter for $60,000 in Seattle. Now that would be $800,000.
Yeah.
So.
What about for working poor who, you know, don't have a disability necessarily, but in a place like Seattle, they just can't afford it. And they're forced into homelessness because there's nothing available that they can afford. And most of these programs are set up to help people that are in the most need, or, you know, have one of those things that you talked about, you know, either addiction or health care issues or something like that. But aren't we just kind of putting those people in a downward spiral?
Well, everybody's in a downward spiral. People who work at my agency, you know, are moving further and further out because they simply cannot find housing with the salary that they get in Seattle. And that goes for policemen and firemen, too. You know, it's just the list goes on, you know. Just that housing is just so expensive.
Now, our parish bought a house across the street from our school just so the new teachers would have a place to live.
So, yeah, that was right into my question, which was, you know about homeless populations in major cities. does it really make sense for these people to stay in these places, or yeah. how would they fare if they moved to more rural or smaller towns, things like that?
You know, there was just a thing on NPR last week where they said, this guy was saying it makes more sense for people to move to small towns. They get a lot more for their money. A lot of jobs, you know, you can do online and stuff. You don't have to be there in person. And, you know, that it doesn't make sense anymore to move to a big city because it's just too expensive and too much of a burden to try to live in one of the major cities anymore.
Because they might have trouble with some of these ways of making a living.
It's not that easy, though. I mean, because we live in the most rural county in Massachusetts, and I worked in social services for many years. And rural poverty has different issues. I mean, all it takes for someone to become homeless in the country is having your car break down, because then you lose your job the next day. I mean, it's, you know, it might be easier in some places where there's jobs that pay and maybe have affordable housing, but those aren't very many places anymore.
Yeah.
So there's other problems you face.
I know Spokane State in part, care part of their problem, because I have a police officer friend that's on a force in Spokane who used to live in Missoula. And they say if they see a homeless person there for 4 days in a row, they buy them a bus ticket and send them to Missoula and say, we'll feed you there. And that happens. So we do. We have a lot of homeless hanging out in Missoula.
Mm-hmm. It happens in my town, too.
Yeah.
Seattle, yeah. $20 will get you from Seattle to Ellensburg.
Mm-hmm.
$5 will get you from Yakima to Ellensburg. Hi, how are you doing? How did you get here? Well, they gave me $5.
Yeah.
You know?
Send you the next town.
Contrary to popular belief, there's not a lot of people moving to Seattle to be homeless. 90% of the people who are homeless in Seattle are residents in the county.
Yeah.
So.
I have a question up here. Is there money to DESC, and so I
there are better organizations than DESC, but DESC is really working with the difficult people. If you've ever been to DESC, in Nut House, it's just really bad off people. Clement Housing and places like that work with people who are better off. I mean, so you get what you get the group that you want. You know, Plymouth wouldn't take half the people in DESC. So it makes Plymouth look better on paper or just in general, because they have people there who look decent, you know, and who are acting a little better. But you go to DESC and those people are off the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, what are you going to do with them? I mean, they're not on the streets. They're not in society bugging people necessarily. But if you go to DESC, it's a madhouse. You know, they have to be somewhere.
I live in Minneapolis, and there's a new zoning program going in called 2040, where they're trying to increase density and more housing. I don't know the specifics of if any of that is held for homelessness, but I'm kind of noticing the same changes in Seattle when I go, that there's increased density and new housing projects popping up all over the place. Can you speak to how that new zoning has affected homelessness and how that, I mean, Minneapolis, is, the prices there are not so out of control as Seattle, but I'm wondering if the trends that Seattle has had will start happening in Minneapolis.
Well, those houses that they build are not for homeless people.
Okay.
They're for people, you know, they're expensive housing. And personally, our house, in our neighborhood, every time somebody moves, they tear down the house and they put up five-plex or four-plex or something like that. And in our house personally, we're surrounded by plexes. We've lost our sunshine. You know, there's more cars on the streets. You have to pull over and wait for a car to come down the street because there's cars on every street. They act like everybody just has, every family just has one car now. And that simply isn't the case. So, no, those homes are not for homeless. Every now and then, they'll put up something where there's mixed housing where they put homeless people in. But they make sure they're not getting the people we mentioned here today.
No.
They're getting, you know, people who, you know, maybe vets or somebody who lost their housing because of they had to move or some reason like that, not because of behavior. And a lot of homeless people, as we went through the thing and read, have behavior issues that need to be addressed. And I don't know what in society is addressing those issues. I don't know who's doing it. Or, you know, they send them to jails. You know, a lot of people with behavior issues are in jail now, you know, but I don't know how that's not helpful. But.
I was struck by the cases that were read that most of them, not all of them, had some form of trauma, abuse, or neglect as a young child in their formative years, which translates to a lot of behavior and problems later in life.
Yeah, that's true.
As a society, we should consider that intervention piece of child welfare. And foster care is not necessarily that.
And so the people
that's regarded to be.
The people that we mentioned and we read off things about today, they'll have children. Mm-hmm. And what's going to become of their children? You know, it's a generational thing. I mean, it's like, what are you going to do with those kids?
Well, I think that's the part of the message, right? I mean, you listen to those stories around there, most of these people start getting addicted when they're 12 or 13. So, yeah, I mean, trust me, from a humanity perspective, we should be helping them now. But the real thing is early prevention. How do we make our society better so people don't even, you know, get to that point as often as possible? And that's, we all do better when we all do better, right? I mean, it takes an awful lot of things to make that happen.
Yeah. I was at Steve and Shirley's session today, and, you know, they go into, I can't explain it, but they go into, what do you go into, Steve?
Systems thinking, systems. Governance,
yeah.
Looking at how society, we manage collectively these sort of thorny issues, how we come to solutions.
And the churches aren't really dealing with that at all yet. I mean, the churches are still just feeding people. I mean, and they're doing a wonderful job at feeding people and getting clothing for people and stuff like that, but it's almost getting too complicated for the church. I mean, because most churches are older people who, you know, have been hanging on to the church for years, and, you know, so unless they're out in the suburbs and there's something altogether different, but still, you know, they're feeding people, they're clothing people, but that doesn't seem to be enough. Yep.
Civilized countries doing.
Very civilized.
I'm serious.
Probably some like mental health care, some free health care, and some addiction counseling, like from a societal like standpoint, would be a real good start.
Well, I think you have to understand too. I mean, the system piece is really important. I mean, with kids that are having trauma and early addiction at preteen years, I mean, that stops their development.
Yeah.
Right? And then they come from a family that's not together or well or healthy. And there's not really a system. I work in social services in the Minneapolis area, and there's not really a system to continually help. I mean, if you have an educated and available adult to kind of argue for them and fight for them and get them to services, you know, you got a chance. But if you don't have that system, who's making that kid go to treatment? And then if the kid
you know, 150 kids in the city of Odessa. So, I mean, the system's just broken on so many levels and so deeply. But I think prevention is also the piece of, like, how you let kids be kids and help them heal. And how do we actually help heal the parents at the same time? But there doesn't seem to be a set structure to really do that consistently. There's pockets, there's people that do this. There's areas where I'm certain.
But it's all money. I mean, people aren't legislating that the money goes to support programs that can take care of the volume of people that need help. You know, come on, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And
this really makes it a little hard. I mean, I've got friends that have been foster care and adopted kids, and they struggle. And the kid just has severe mental health, and there's no place to go. And this kid has been from Minneapolis, then to Colorado, and does better for a while, and then has a hard time, and can't be home because there's other kids, and the parents are loving, and the kid loves the parents, but the kid's struggling. And there's literally no place for this kid to go. So they sit in ERs and back and forth and juvie and ER because this kid can't regulate. To no fault of their own, really. I mean, they're working with them and giving them as much tools and time as possible. But, you know, there's layers also they're just missing.
Okay. Thank you all very much. It's 7 o'clock. I got to stop. Thank you.